Okay, my name is Huda Bedawi. My family is originally from Egypt, and my parents came to the States in the early 60s as graduate students. They were studying at Indiana University, and that's where I was born, in Bloomington, Indiana. And after finishing their graduate studies, my father got a job at a university in Canada. So at the age of 5, I moved to Canada, and that's where I lived until the age of 25 when I got married and moved to Minnesota. So it's been about half my life in Canada and half in Minnesota. As I was growing up, the Muslim community in Halifax, where we were, was rather small. Mm-hmm. There was a mosque, and we would get together once a week at the mosque, and there was Sunday school for the children. But there wasn't the strong support that you find in some of the larger communities now. So there was always that feeling of being different, whether in school or just out in the public. So, but I think that that influence actually strengthened our identity. It made us, toughened us up and made us strong. So I wouldn't say that it was a disadvantage. It sort of made us more aware of who we are. For high school, actually, I went to a private girls' school, a Christian school. Actually, that school was very accommodating, and we actually had a choice at that time between a Catholic girls' school and this other Christian girls' school. And the Christian girls' school was more accommodating than the Catholic school. So that's the one that we chose, and there really were no issues of contention whatsoever. We respected them, they respected us. They provided a room for me to pray in during lunch hour. So it was really a relationship of mutual respect. There wasn't any sort of tension or contention, you know, being a Muslim in a Christian school at all. I guess the major influences for me were my parents. The Muslim community in Halifax, Canada, where we were living, was a pretty small community. At that time, there weren't any Islamic schools, so we attended public schools. And so I would say, really, the effort that my parents put into raising us and implanting that Islamic identity into us was really the major impact that we had in our lives as children growing up. Just simple everyday examples. For example, at bedtime, you know, parents tuck in their kids and give them a bedtime story. So as our bedtime story, my father would read to us the story of the life of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And that had an incredible impact on us. Just the dignity of his character and the different situations he faced throughout his life and how he responded to them had a really strong impact on us. And then just the prayers. We always prayed it as a family, as a group. My father would make adhan through the house. If we were downstairs playing, he'd stand at the top of the stairs and make adhan. And we'd all gather together to pray. And just, you know, make the prayers that you say before eating and, you know, just all those daily life things. Yeah, actually, in terms of my education and what I had hoped for as a career, since I was a young child, 8 years old, I had always wanted to be a doctor. And so I always had medical school in mind. I was amazed and intrigued by the human body and how it functions. And even at that young age, I remember thinking, I'd like to be a doctor so I can serve Muslim women who want to see a female doctor rather than a male doctor. And at that time, and I'm kind of dating myself here, there weren't as many female doctors as we see nowadays. As I grew older, and after I had my first child, I sort of switched gears and I went into the field of education. And that was because after having my first child, I started thinking, you know, how am I going to raise this child as a Muslim? And that's when I started focusing my attention towards Islamic schools. And so I decided to go into education. I got my teaching license and eventually did become involved in Islamic schools myself. So it was always aligned with my faith in some way. It didn't necessarily go as I had originally planned. The significance for the importance of Islamic education to me was I sort of divided into two fronts. One is sort of the defensive front and one is the proactive front. On the proactive front, providing children with an Islamic education helps imbibe that Islamic identity that you want to help maintain. In a society that's sometimes, you know, some of the values are at odds with what we want to teach our children. So it's a sort of, like I said, a proactive effort to help build strong Muslim children. And then the defensive part of it is sort of protecting Muslim children from some of the negative influences that you find in public schools that not only Muslims are concerned about, but everybody's concerned about, things like drugs and, you know, promiscuity amongst teenagers and that type of thing. And another aspect also is providing the child with a God-centered atmosphere. Public schools, as good as they may be in providing academic education, are sort of sterile when it comes to spirituality. And I felt it was important for children to always be aware, as Muslims, that God is the center of everything in their life, and it's not just, you know, school 5 days a week and maybe Sunday school on the weekends. So I came to Minnesota in 1990. The landscape of the Muslim community back then was a lot different than what we see now. Even though I had considered it to be a large community at that time, it's still considered much smaller than what we see now. What you had at that time were basically two groups. There were the students, mostly international students, who had come from different countries all over the world and were studying mostly at the University of Minnesota. And then you had the immigrants, professionals, who had immigrated sometime in the past from different countries, Egypt, Pakistan, India, and were working in Minnesota. So that was basically the two groups that were present at that time. And now you see much greater diversity in the community. It's expanded exponentially in those 20 years. An MF school started back in 1993, and those students who I mentioned earlier, which were part of the Minnesota community, had now graduated, gotten married, settled down, had children, and were thinking about, you know, we need a school for our children. So a small group of people got together, and that's how the Islamic school was founded. It started off small with about 30 students, and it started actually in the home of Sister Zahra Williams, who's the current principal of Al-Amal School. And it expanded very quickly after that. They moved to the ICM building here in Fridley, and it's grown from 30 students back then to over 400 students now. I was involved with Al-Amal School from very early on. I wasn't actually involved in founding the school. My husband was. But as soon as the school was established, within 6 months, I had started working as a teacher in the school. And I started on a part-time basis, thinking, okay, I'll just help out for this half a year until they can find another teacher, and I ended up staying there for 10 years. So I taught as a homeroom teacher, second and third grade. I also served as an assistant principal during my last 3 years with the school from 2000 to 2003. As a teacher in an Islamic school, one of the core objectives, of course, is to provide a solid education, academic education. At the same time, to provide students with a feeling of belonging, that they're part of a community, and then again, helping them develop that sense of Islamic identity, who they are as Muslims, what they believe in, incorporating God all throughout the day in the classroom, tying academic subjects to religion, you know. For example, in science, when you teach science, you don't just teach it as dry facts, but this is Allah's creation, and look at the miracle and beauty of His creation. So there's a little bit of a twist to the actual teaching itself. And then, like I said, in dealing with the students, using Islamic terminology like inshallah, God willing. If a child performs well, you say mashallah, what God has willed. So they're sort of immersed in this environment all the time. In terms of student, of course, in any school you're going to deal with issues of student discipline. And in issues of student discipline, we always try to refer back again to some sort of Islamic teaching. For example, if a child does something to another and the other wants to retaliate, we bring examples from the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, how he was not a spiteful or revengeful person, how he was abused and harmed, and he forgave those and overlooked those who harmed him. So just trying to discipline with an, you know, Islamic value aspect to it. Yeah, and Amal School went through a lot of transformation even during the 10 years that I was there, simply because of the growth of the student body. And as this school became more well-known, more people started joining, you had a greater diversity of parent and student population. At the beginning, it was, like I said, very small. Resources were very limited. You had a very, very dedicated core group of teachers, administrators, board, to the extent that the board would come in on Friday evenings and they'd do all the moppings, the mopping of the halls and the cleaning of the classrooms. People really sacrificed a lot. Teachers were cleaning their own classrooms, taking out their own garbage. There was a lot of personal sacrifice. People were really invested in to making the school a success. As the school grew, a lot of these hardships were eased. We acquired custodians and teachers were able to focus more on teaching in the classroom. But at the same time, you didn't have that close family spirit. It became more of a professional institution, which is a good thing. I mean, I recognize that any institution, as it grows from infancy through to maturity, is going to go through these phases. So it's not something I look at with criticism or sadness. I just see it as part of the natural growth of an institution. I was enrolled at the University of Minnesota, a Doctor of Education program in administration and policy. And the motivation that led me to enroll in that program was to try to help at Emmett School in whatever way I could. As a small private school, we didn't have access to a lot of the resources, and we didn't have a lot of the experience that public schools have. So I was hoping that through that program of study, I would, you know, learn something that I could benefit the school with eventually. And I learned that there is no silver bullet, there's no magic pill, that, you know, as I said, an institution has to go through phases and learn. The study that I did for my dissertation was directly related to, actually it was a case study of an Emmett school, and it was investigating why parents choose an Islamic school for their children. And that stemmed from the general research on public school choice. And there are a lot of studies out there examining why parents choose, you know, alternative schools for their children, whether it's a Catholic school or a private school. And nothing or very little had been done on Islamic schools. So I, you know, investigated that and found out that the motivations are pretty much the reasons that I myself as a parent had when I embarked on the field of education, and that's issues of Islamic identity and Islamic environment. Raising a Muslim child in the U.S. or in Minnesota is something that needs, I think, constant effort. It starts before the baby's even born, and it's something that starts from day one. Some people unwittingly forget about or ignore that aspect until their children start growing up, and then they're like, oh, I need to teach my kid, you know, that they're a Muslim. And it's something that has to start from day one. And I think another thing that's very important is, and this is something that our parents did with us, they didn't raise us as Egyptians or as Arabs. That was irrelevant. You know, the issue of nationalism and pride. No, it was, you're a Muslim, and so you are a brother and a sister to all Muslims and to all humanity. So, you know, this may not be relevant for parents who have been living here for a long time or who were born and raised here, but I think for immigrant parents, sometimes they may confuse culture and religion. And if you're trying to raise your child as a Muslim, then you teach them Islam. Not, we don't do this because back home it's not nice. No, we were always taught that the reason that we do or don't do anything is because God says we do or don't do, and not because our culture or in back home we don't do that. So I think it's important for parents to distinguish between culture and religion, and just, you know, keep it clear and pure for the kids. I think the core strength of the community here is the diversity and the willingness of the different groups to work with each other. I see that on a national level as well as on a Minnesota level, where, for example, in the past in the United States, there might have been some contention, for example, between immigrant communities and indigenous American Muslim communities. And now you see efforts, for example, Siraj al-Hajj, trying to mend, you know, and bring these groups together and get them working together. So you see that happening on a national level, and you see that happening on the state level as well. You have Somali communities, Arab American, Indo-Pak, Indigenous American, and I think that they're starting to reach out to each other more than before, and there's not so much these isolated pockets. What I see for the future of Muslims in Minnesota, I see it is already happening, and that's more outreach to the community at large, coming out of isolation. And I think that that's one of the silver linings of September 11th, is that it's forced Muslims to come out of isolation and to react and interact more with the community at large. In the past, and I know growing up as a child, that's the way it was, is that we are Muslims, we're separate, we have to stay in our mosques on our own, and that's them, and we are we, and that's not right. And I see this happening already. Muslim organizations are jointly working with other organizations on interfaith projects, on just social benefit types of projects. I think the common misconceptions about Muslims in Minnesota would be the same misconceptions that are held nationwide and worldwide, and those are the association of Islam and Muslims with violence and terrorism, with backwardness, especially with regards to women. Another misconception that really hurts me a lot is the notion that Islam and Christianity are at odds, and that Islam is an anti-Christ or an anti-Christian type of religion. And so I feel it's important for the message to get out that the God we believe in is the same God, that we love and respect and revere the same prophets, that that Muslims and Christians have lived in harmony and peace, you know, in different times throughout history, that the Crusades is done. I mean, Muslims shouldn't hold a grudge over that forever, and Christians shouldn't hold grudges forever. I mean, history is past, and there have been enough examples of cooperation and peaceful coexistence that we should pick that up and continue.